Hello everyone, my name is Eli Dick. This is the 12th hour Pop Talk Sanitarian Congregation outside the 12th hour in Missouri, Texas. Today is September 9, 2017, or it is evening 19, 2020. We're going to start our second service on this 7th day Sabbath with a song entitled Rest Ye the Perishing. Rest ye the perishing, take for the dying, cast in the dead, eat from sun and the grave. Weep o'er every month, lift up the fallen, tell in the blasphemy the mighty to say. Rest ye the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will say. Though they are sliding him, still he is waiting, waiting the death and the trial to receive. Plead with him earnestly, plead with him gently, he will forgive if they only believe. Rest ye the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will save. Down in the human heart, crushed by the tempter, beatings not buried that grace can restore. Touched by a loving heart, wakened by kindness, chords that were broken will vibrate once more. Rest ye the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will save. Rest ye the perishing, duty demands it, wait for the labor the Yah will provide. Back to the narrow way, patiently render, tell her for wonder her Savior has died. Rest ye the perishing, care for the dying, Yahshua is merciful, Yahshua will save.
Part 3, Behold, I Make All Things New. We're on page 54 of track number 9 of Beaky Hollow. We're dealing with the title today, The First Fruits of the Harvest. As all the books of the Bible meet and end in the Revelation, for the seeding of the 144,000 must, as a result, find its completement in the writings of the prophets, and as nowhere but in Ezekiel 9 is found an event analogous unto that of the Revelation 7. It follows that the marking and sealing are identical, both of which are to separate the wicked from the righteous, for the angels in the former smiting all who have not the mark, for the angels in the latter are hurting all who have not the seal. See Ezekiel 9:4-6, Revelation 7:2-3, and Revelation 9:15. For the fact, therefore, that at no time in the church history, save in the Noah's day, has Yahweh destroyed all the wicked and preserved only the righteous. And the conclusive evidence and the proof that the marking or sealing of 144,000 is yet incomplete. Plainly then, among Yahweh's people, there those who fail to receive the seal are in the figure of the parable represented by the tares and are appointed unto destruction, whereas those who receive the seal and who escape the destruction are symbolized by the wheat and are destined for the barn, the kingdom, Matthew 13:30. As the tares and the wheat are to grow together until the harvest, and as the harvest is in the end of the world, Matthew 13:30-39, obviously, the 144,000 are called the first fruits because they are the class of saints, wheat, first to be separated from the tares. They are, moreover, a class not defiled with women. According to the Revelation 744,000 are of the 12 tribes, Israel and Judah, not of the Gentiles also, both the marking and the slaughtering, according unto Ezekiel 9, are to take place in both Israel and Judah, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, where the harvest judgment commences. And if the judgment, asked the apostle, first began at us, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of Yahweh? 1 Peter 4:17. In the accumulated life focusing to this point toward the 144,000, the first fruits, stand forth clearly as the Christian Jews who were found in the Seventh-day Adventist Church at the commencement of the harvest. In this respect, they are not defiled with women. They have, in other words, from their birth, been Yahweh's people, Jews, not defiled with heathen worship. So, I was born in the Adventist Church, and my first 32 years of my life was believing only in the Adventist Church as the true church in the world. Even though they had a lot of false doctrine, but they had a lot of true doctrine as well, and they mixed it together. And I heard all of this for my first 32 years of my life. But I was not defiled with their false doctrine, even though I was there in the midst of it and worshiped with them. Because as I learned what truth was, I always countered their false doctrine with the truth. And so I continued that clear up to my when I joined Brother Johnson in 1970. I continued on with that very practice of, if I understood it clearly, I would accept it. But if I didn't understand it clearly, I always put it on the back burner and say, well, I'll accept as much as I can understand. And that's the way my mentality was all my life. That's the way it's always been. Anyway, it goes on to say, Yahweh's people, Jews, not defiled with heathen worship, for they follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth, with the result that when he stands on the Mount Zion, they too stand there. And further, the fact that these are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins, and that they are the servants of our Elohim, clearly imply that they are together a class defiled with women, a second fruits. Okay. For this class of the saints must be those who have at one time been married to some unchristian mistress, a heathen church, and who consequently are not descendants of either Jacob or the apostolic congregation of the apostles and their Gentile converts. So, there are to be two harvests, one from the Seventh-day Adventist Church and one from the world. For the record, the former mentions only Israelites, the 144,000, those not defiled with women. Other churches not of this faith. In other words, though it does not say that there may not be others, while the record of the latter, however, definitely embraces a great multitude from all nations, which must necessarily be both of the undefiled and defiled ones, hyphen Jews and Gentile. So here you are, you have the two classes, the defiled and the undefiled. Thus, as after the sin of 144,000, the first fruit, come the great multitude from all nations, the latter can logically only be called the second fruits. Otherwise, 144,000 cannot be called the first fruit. For where there is no second, there can be no first. And the first fruits, 144,000, being living saints, so also therefore are the second fruits, the great multitude. For the first fruits, moreover, being analogous to the firstborn, the priests are therefore the ministers, the servants of Yahweh, those who are to bring in the second fruits. For the prophesying of the separation of the one and of the ingathering of the other, Isaiah declared, "For by the fire and by his sword will the Yahweh plead with all flesh, and the slain of Yahweh shall be many. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, the Tarshish, Pool, and Lud, that draw the bow, to Tubal and Avan, and to the isle of the far off, that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. And they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Yeshua out of all nations, upon horses and in chariots, and in litters, and upon mules, and upon swift beasts, to my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith the Yahweh, as the children of Israel bring an offering and a clean vessel into the house of the Yahweh." Isaiah 66:16-19-20. Note that those who escape the slaughter of the Yahweh are sent to proclaim his fame and to show forth his glory among the Gentiles. They shall bring all their brethren for an offering unto the Yahweh out of all nations. They shall, in other words, preach this gospel of the kingdom in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. Matthew 24:14. This great work, which no others have ever been able to accomplish, these escaped ones will because in their mouth is found no guile. For the fact that the 144,000 are without guile in their mouth shows that as the servants of Yahweh, they have a message to proclaim, and that they are to be found blameless in their proclaiming of that message. For the speaking of the truth and nothing but the truth, they shall prosper wherever they go with the message, although they are sent with it when the winds are loosed and blowing. Let's read that again. For the speaking of the truth and nothing but the truth, they shall prosper wherever they go with the message, although they are sent with it when or they are sent with the message of the loud cry of the fifth angel's message when the winds are loosed and blowing. Now, let me tell you something. We have the winds that are cut loose today, literally, and are blowing. I mean, they form out there at the sea, out there in the middle of the ocean, and the radars and so forth, they pick it up and take pictures of it and track it, and they fly through the eye of it, and they get out there and to find out how fast it's going and what greater magnitude it is, and And then they warn the people on shore, it's headed toward your direction. It's headed toward your coastline of the East Coast. And we got that Irma coming in right now. Due to hit in Florida this afternoon. And it's been already tearing up the Caribbean and so forth, but the people's all had warning ahead of time. Said, these winds are forming out there and they're about to blow. Well, that's what Yahweh's telling us through his message here. These winds are about to blow. For the angels holding back the winds at the four corners of the earth, you notice that they're holding back some worldwide trouble, which should it break out while the church is in her Laodicean condition, would block the ceiling, and from this fact, it follows that immediately after the 144,000 or seal, the trouble will begin, signalizing the angels loosing the winds with this trouble such as never was since there was a nation. Daniel 12:1. For the great multitude is to be brought face to face while being called out of Babylon, Revelation 18:4, into the kingdom. This time of the trouble is foreshadowed by the present trouble, which the church is bringing upon the first fruits, those who are being sealed, marked in her midst to be removed to the kingdom, the barn, Matthew 13:30. The vessels, Matthew 13:48. Consequently, as the making of the image of the beast, Revelation 13:11-18, is in prophecy, the only worldwide event of this kind, and as the great multitude with the palms in their hands come out of the great tribulation, the only logical conclusion is that after the 144,000 are sealed, and while the winds are blowing, the second fruits will be gathered and the work of the gospel closed. For the trouble will burst forth as the two-horned beast decrees, that no man might buy or sell save he that has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name, Revelation 13:17. Thus will the dragon be wroth with the woman, and make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of Yahweh, and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah, Revelation 12:17. And at the same time, the angels will be allowed to hurt all who trouble the congregation of Yahweh, and who attempt to join it in the same way as the terrors now do, and thus hurting the wicked, the angels will execute the wrath of the Lamb. In view of this, Yahshua asked, who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:17. It is a great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, Malachi 4:5. And the sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has surprised the hypocrites. Hence the question, who among us shall dwell with the divine fire? Who among us shall dwell with the everlasting burning? Only those who see themselves in the need of everything, and these are the ones who see the King. He that walketh righteously and speedeth uprightly, he that despiseth the gain of oppression, that shaketh his hands from holding of bribes, that stoppeth his ears from hearing of blood, and shutteth his eyes from seeing evil, he shall dwell on high. His place of the defense shall be the munition of rock. Bread shall be given him, his water shall be sure. Thine eyes shall see the King in his beauty. He shall behold the land that is very far off. Thine heart shall meditate terror. Where is the scribe? Where is the receiver? Where is he that counted the tower? Thou shalt not see a fierce people, a people of a deeper speech than thou canst perceive, of a stammering tongue that thou canst not understand. Look upon Zion, the city of our solemnities. Thine eyes shall see Jerusalem, a quiet habitation, a tabernacle that shall not be taken down. Not one of the stakes thereof shall ever be removed, neither shall any of the cords thereof be broken. But there the glory of Yahweh will be unto us a place of broad rivers and streams, wherein shall go no galley with oars, neither shall gallant ship pass thereby. For Yahweh is our refuge, Yahweh is our lawgiver, Yahweh is our king. Let's do that again. For the Yeshua is our judge, the Son. For the Yeshua is our lawgiver. We know that. Genesis 49:10. Judah is our lawgiver. This is where Yeshua come from. Yeshua is our king. He will save us. Isaiah 33:14-22. Now here's a direct prophecy from the Old Testament by Isaiah the prophet, pointing right straight to Yeshua. And no doubt in the Isaiah 33:14-22, those sacred names were recorded. Yeshua. But you see, the translators never recognized Yeshua in the Old Testament. They just only recognized Yahweh the Father, and give him all the titles of Lord and God and King and all that stuff. Michael, the great prince, shall then stand up and deliver every one that shall be found written in the book, Daniel 12:1. Because in that day the Yeshua is both the shepherd, the faithful. He is both to shepherd the faithful and to punish the unfaithful. The message which announces this great and dreadful day, Malachi 4:5, is titled the Shepherd's Rod. Yeshua's voice therefore crieth unto the city, hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it? Micah 6:9. Sunken in the lead of sin, slumber and sleep, the city, the church, and Yahweh's merciful effort to prepare it against this day of the trouble is to be startled to life by his urgent cry. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Isaiah 52:1. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Yahshua is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people, but the Yahshua shall arise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee, and the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising. Isaiah 60:1-3. For the congregation of the little sins, being the last of the seven churches, is the last section of the apostolic congregation in which the wheat and the tares are commingled. For the overcomers, the marked ones from it, those who hear the rod, begin the eighth section of the church. And there you go. Here's this eighth section. This is the house of David. The fifth group of laborers in Matthew 20:6 that are called at the end of the 11th hour. The one symbolized by the barn, that's the kingdom of David, Matthew 13:30, and by the vessels, verse 48, also by the golden candlestick of the Zechariah 4. Of her the Yeshua says, for the Gentiles shall see thy righteousness and all kings thy glory. Thou shalt be called by a new name which the mouth of Yahweh shall name. There shall also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Yahweh, and a royal diadem in the hand of thy Elohim, Isaiah 62:2-3. Among the latest sins, however, those who refuse to arouse and take in the situation, who will not sigh and cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst of Ezekiel 9:4, will be left without the mark and will consequently fall under the slaughter weapons of the angels, Ezekiel 9, while those who receive the mark will escape them and be shielded from the trouble, for the shields being symbolized by the barn and the vessel, Matthew 13:30-48. This sparing of the wheat on the one hand and slaying of the tares on the other hand among these first fruits, those in the congregation foretoken the sparing of the good and slaying of the bad among the second fruits of those in the Babylon, Revelation 18:4. Hence, the work in Laodicea typifies that in Babylon, while Yahweh is now marking the first, or Yahshua is now marking the first fruits of his kingdom. This is the Son. Those in Laodicea, the ancient men, Testimony, Volume 5, page 211, supposing themselves to be doing his bidding by the forcing the laity not to listen unto Yahshua's messenger and not to read his message in the shepherd's rod, are attempting to prevent them from receiving his mark, which is to keep them from the perishing. And as the prophecy shows, this war, when finished in Laodicea, spreads into Babylon as the Yahshua begins marking the second fruits of his kingdom. And as the beast supposes himself, as do the ancient men now, to be doing the Yahshua's bidding, decree that all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, Revelation 13:16, receive his mark rather than the Yahshua's, which is to keep them also from perishing. These two markings, the beast and the Yahshua's, in themselves show a time of the separating of the citizens of heaven and the citizens of the world. And because this is a work such as never was, it brings a time of trouble such as never was. The great and dreadful day of the Yahweh, the present trouble in Laodicea, is therefore to spread into Babylon and develop into the time of trouble such as never was. A development shows that the same satanic power now working in Laodicea will soon fully manifest itself in the consolation or the consolidation with the beast within the churches in Babylon, there to oppose the marking of the second fruits as it is now in the Laodicea, opposing the marking of the first fruits. So, the Adventists, they're not Babylon, but they consolidated with Babylon and all the other Protestant churches to meld into one organization. And furthermore, as the eighth section of the church eternal, which is the house of David, the everlasting kingdom of David, is of the seventh section, come out of the Adventist church, the church temporal. So the Adventist church is a temporal church. The Adventist church is temporal. Just so the eighth beast, the post-millennial world, is of the seventh beast. Revelation 17:11, the premillennial world. For the inescapable parallelism between the work of Yahweh and the work of Satan, which the inspiration so sharply and vividly brings into focus, speaks for itself that we are entering into the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, of the Yahshua, a fact which should stir our hearts as nothing ever has. And since henceforth from the time of the 144,000 are marched and the sinners taken away from among them, no more shall the wicked commingle with the righteous from that time on forever. Therefore the kingdom, kingdom church, the eighth, which is the everlasting kingdom of heaven, everlasting kingdom of David, restored here, everlasting kingdom of the Yahshua and the 144,000 and all of the purified brethren that are brought in from the great multitude of the Gentile world. They make up this eighth and it stays pure. They're separated from the righteous from the wicked at the harvesting. Prophetically looking forward to the church's purified state, the prophet Zechariah saw that every part in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness unto the Yahshua of the host, And all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and seed therein. And in that day there shall be no more of the Canaanite in the house of the Yahshua of hosts. Zechariah 14:21. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Yahshua. I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people, and they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, Know the Yahshua, for they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Yahshua, for I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. Jeremiah 31:33-34. Then shall go forth the word of Yahweh, Hear ye that are far off what I have done, and ye that are near, acknowledge my might. Isaiah 33:13. All who have acknowledged and profited by his might in the past, along with all who will acknowledge and profit by his might in the future, are defined in the five groups in their kingdom. So these five groups are found in Matthew 20. These groups are number one, 144,000 Israelites, the first fruits of the living, whose nobles shall be of themselves, and whose governor shall proceed from the midst of them, Jeremiah 30:21. They shall return unto Jerusalem and stand on the Mount Zion of the Lamb, number two, those whom John saw after the sealing of the 144,000 gathered from all nations and kindreds and peoples and tongues during the great tribulation, the time of trouble such as never was, the great multitude who go to Jerusalem before the resurrection. Number three, those who arise unto everlasting life in the resurrection of Daniel 12:2. And number four, those Israelites who shall come forth in the resurrection of Ezekiel 37:1-14. And number five, all who come in the resurrection of the Revelation 20:6 collectively. These are all the Israelites and Gentiles who shall return unto Jerusalem, possess the promised land, and then the whole earth. Ironically, futile, therefore, in view of what we have seen in these pages, is the ever-strengthening aim to rebuild Jerusalem, as one movement is endeavoring to do in response unto the prophecies of the kingdom, by taking there the non-Christian Jews, and as another movement is endeavoring to do in response to the same prophecies by the taking there the English-speaking world, the kingdom of both believers and unbelievers would be none the better than the kingdoms of today. It would, in fact, be nothing more than a Babylon, nothing more than the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Revelation 18:2. The work for such a hope is to take long steps toward bringing in the Satan's powerful delusion. Counterfeiting Yahshua is a counterfeit kingdom. Thus it is that only those who have been diligent students of the Scriptures and who have received the love of the truth will be shielded from the powerful delusions that take the world captive. By the Bible testimony, these will detect the deceiver in his disguise. Are the people of Yahweh now so firmly established upon his word that they would not yield to the evidence of their senses? Would they, in such a crisis, cling to the Bible and the Bible only? The Great Controversy, page 625. In view of this urgency to safeguard the Christian crowning hope, the kingdom It is expedient, therefore, to consolidate the main points thus far established in the end gathering, hence a summary of the first and the second fruits. A summary of the first and second fruits. Number one, when the time of the terrors, the children of the wicked one, Matthew 13:38, has come to its full, then will commence the harvest, and it will bring the end of the world. Verses 30 and 40. Taking place in the end of the world, it preforce is the gathering of the people by the Elijah's message. The last harvest sent proclamation of the gospel, which is preached first to the church just before the great and dreadful day of Yahweh, Malachi 4:5, and then to all the world during that long expected day. For the message finding the net full upon its arrival and subsequently causing a division between those who accept it and those who reject it, it enables the angels to select the bad from among the good, Matthew 13:48. These good are the first fruits of the redeemed. Then follows the separation implicit in the call, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues, Revelation 18:4. These called out ones are the second fruits. In the first instance, the bad are cast out from among the good that are caught in the net. The message reposing in the church, whereas in the second instance, only Yahweh's faithful are called out from among the sinners in Babylon, there being no tares among them. For the tares and the wheat were commingled in the former instance, because while men slept, says Yahweh, the enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat, whereas the wheat is kept free from the tares in the latter instance, because, says Yahweh, I have set watchmen upon thy walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace day nor night, Isaiah 62:6. Babylon's dominion being symbolized by the scarlet colored beast, the beast upon which sits the woman, Revelation 17. The stabilization is therefore representative of an international religious political system. The religious aspect is symbolized by the woman, the civil aspect by the horns of the beast, and the combination a symbolical prediction of a worldwide system of church and state union. The beast alone, exclusive of the horns, represents, as do the beast of Daniel 7, the world's multitudes, the subjects of the antitypical Babylon, from among whom Elohim's people are called. This gathering constitutes the separation of the second fruits. From this, the truth is again seen that the first and the second fruits of the living, the one gathered from within the church at the commencement of the great and dreadful day, and the other gathered out of Babylon during that day, constitutes the kingdom at its beginning and before the resurrection of the dead. The fact, moreover, that only the good from the net were kept and that only Yahweh's people are called out of Babylon, hail the kingdom as the home of the righteous only. But this shall be the covenant, declares the Yahweh, sure, concerning this glorious truth of the kingdom, that I will make of the house of Israel after those days, saith the Yahweh. I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, know the Yahweh, For they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith Yahweh. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. Jeremiah 31:33-34. And they shall call them, or claims, Isaiah, the holy people, the redeemed of Yahweh. Isaiah 62:12. And an highway shall be there, he assures, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those that wayfarers, men, though fools shall not err therein. Isaiah 35:8. When this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, Matthew 24:14, the work of the gospel shall end, and probation shall close for every human being. When both Jew and Gentile who have responded to the call have been gathered from the four corners of the earth, then will the harvest end. Then will the last lingering moment of the probationary time have fled away forever. Then will the end have come, and from the great white throne will have gone forth the immutable fiat. He that is in unjust, let him be unjust still, and he which is filthy, let him be filthy still. And he that is righteous, let him be righteous still, and he that is holy, let him be holy still. Revelation 22:11, learning to their terror with the passing of probation that they are forever lost, the neglectful will cry out bitterly, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, and we are not saved. Jeremiah 8:20. Behold, I come quickly, declares Joshua. Following his solemn pronouncement of the close of probation, verse 11, and my reward is with me to give every man according unto his work shall be. Revelation 22:12. Here the anchor evidence that probation closes before the Yahshua's visible return. Number 4, at the close of the seventh plague, Yahshua himself visible unto every eye, Revelation 1:7, shall descend from the heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of Yahweh, and the dead in Yahshua shall rise first. Then we which are alive remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Yahshua in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Yahshua. 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. With the righteous dead of all ages being resurrected and joined with the living saints, the kingdom is completely made up of the righteous, having been set on his right, the kingdom, and the wicked on his left, Babylon. Then while the king sends those on his left into everlasting punishment, he says unto those on his right, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Matthew 25:46-34. Following this is realized the long-awaited fruition of the glorious hope engendered of the Yahshua's promise, in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. John 14:2-3. This stirring hope of every Christian is beautifully foreshadowed in the translation of the Enoch, Genesis 5:24, the translation of the Elijah, 2 Kings 2:11, and the resurrection of the multitude whom Yahshua led on high, Matthew 27:52-53, Ephesians 4:8, a threefold typification and a triple accord with the Yahweh's law of the type, that where there is type, there must also be the antitype. Were there not assuredly in this connection to be an antitype ascension of all the saints, then there would not have been a type translation of Enoch and Elijah and ascension of the multitude. The type would have been arbitrary, purposeless, and misleading. not only the saints therefore, but also the heavens shall depart, the wicked shall call to the mountains to fall upon them. At the close of the seventh plague will come the fullness of the end of which, as claims the Revelator, the heaven, the atmosphere of our earth, Genesis 1:8, departed the scroll when it is rolled together, and every mountain and island moved out of their places. The kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bondman, and every free man hid in the dens, and in the rocks of the mountains, saying, unto the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Revelation 6:14-17. The fact that all these events close with the second coming of Yahshua, also the fact that the prophecies plainly declare that Yahweh will gather all his people from among the nations, call forth his own from their own graves, catch up all the redeemed, both the living and the resurrected, to meet him in the air and to go with him to the mansions which he has been preparing for them ever since his ascension, destroy all the wicked, leave the earth empty without life or light, then make it void without form and finally let not the dead live again until the 1,000 years are finished. All these facts make manifest that the earth is in a state of chaos while the saints live and reign with Yahshua in heaven during the 1,000 years. In this way, Satan is bound by a chain of the circumstances which makes it impossible his deceiving the nations until the 1,000 years are finished and until the Yahshua again returns to the saints. And in this way, Satan is bound by a chain of the circumstances which makes it impossible his deceiving the nations until the 1,000 years are finished, and until the Yahweh again returns with the saints, calls forth the wicked dead from their graves, and allows them to live for a short season, a season in which Satan again deceives them. Looking forward into the resurrection after the millennium, the Revelator saw that the wicked went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city, and fire came down from Yahweh out of the heaven and devoured them. And the devil that deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are. This is the second death, Revelation 20, verse 9, 10, and 14. Then the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given unto the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Hitherto is the end of the matter. Daniel 7:27-28. Seeing that all these things shall shortly come to pass, stand ye in the ways, says the Yahweh, and seek and ask for the old path. Jeremiah 6:16. Now to give heed to fables and ending genealogies. Endless genealogies, which minister questions rather than righteous edifying, which is in faith so do, 1 Timothy 1:4. Not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth, Titus 1:14, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap unto themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned into fables. 2 Timothy 4:3-4. My speech and my preaching, says the Apostle Paul, was not with the enticing words of man's wisdom, but in the demonstration of the Spirit and of the power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of Yahweh, 1 Corinthians 2:4-5. Let this counsel warn Elohim's people away from the precarious practice of hanging their doctrines and their faith on the gilded hooks of the perverted interpretations and of the renderings from tongues, unknown to them, the Hebrew, the Greek, and this, that, or the other, and of the interpretative translations that bolster up and serve the interests of the theological preconceptions and predilections, better than does the authorized version, the version in which Elohim, in his providence and in his foreknowledge of the finishing his work by the English-speaking world, has given unto his people to lead them into his kingdom. Beware, therefore, of the pretension of the pseudo-scholarship, which has seemed to be more dependable than that which Elohim himself has chosen and wrought, and the simplicity. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. Matthew 24:35. Let's go to page 99. Behold, I make all things new. It says, fear Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of judgment is come. To clear the appointed time of this message, we must take into consideration the revelation of John, which from the 4th chapter to the 22nd is continuous without a break. That is, the conjunction and begins each chapter showing that all these revelations were given unto John at the time that the voice said unto him, come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. Things that were so, that were to transpire sometime after he had the vision of them. And John, having had this vision about 96 A.D., the first angel's message therefore could not possibly have been preached before that time. For to repeat, he is not writing of the things of the past, but of the things of the future. Again, the fact that he says, I saw another, the first angel having the everlasting gospel to preach, further shows that this angel's message had not been preached before he had the vision, but that it was to be preached in the future from that time. Moreover, there is neither scripture nor history to show that the judgment began in or before John's time. Still further, as the first angel's message was never preached before 1844, then when the judgment hour came, this angel's message, the message concerning the judgment, went forth. As the investigated judgment is in the two sections, the first devoted to the dread, to the dead, the second to unto the living. The fact is evident that though the first, the second, and the third angel's message apply directly to the period of the judgment of the living, they must also, though indirectly, apply the period of the judgment of the dead. Thus only except as a warning of coming events have they been preached since 1844. Hence, when the judgment of the living commences, and when the image of the beast is fully set up, then these messages are with a loud cry to be repeated as present truths concerning the living instead of the dead. For the foregoing facts concerning the eternal throne, the provisional throne, and the judgment proved correct, the book which was used in the proclamation of the first, second, and third angels' message, in their first application, for it, in it we read, I saw the Father rise from the throne and in a flaming chariot go into the Holy of Holies within the veil and sit down. Then Yahshua rose up from the throne, and most of those who were bowed down rose with him. I did not see one ray of light pass from Yahshua into the cheerless multitude after he arose, and they were left in the perfect darkness. Those who arose when Yahshua did kept their eyes fixed on him as he left the throne and led them out a little way. Then he raised his right arm, and we heard his lovely voice saying, wait here, I am going to my Father to receive the kingdom. Keep your garments spotless, and a little while I will return from the wedding and receive you unto myself. Then a cloudy chariot with the wheels like flaming fire, surrounded by the angels, came unto where Yahshua was. He stepped into the chariot and was borne to the holiest where the Father sat. There I beheld Yahshua, great high priest, standing before the Father. Early Writings, page 55. Someone may ask, if the names of the dead who have not And the Yahshua enduring to the end of their lives must be blotted out of the book of life. Then why does Yahshua preach unto the dead? 1 Peter 3:18-20. And the same scripture giving rise to this question is also the answer. For the Yahshua also hath once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us unto Yahweh, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened by the Spirit, by which also he went and preached unto the spirits in the prison, which sometimes were disobedient, when once the long suffering of Yahweh waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was a preparing, wherein few, that is, 8 souls were saved by the water, 1 Peter 3:18-20. This scripture does not say that Yahshua and the person while his body lay in the tomb preached to the spirits in prison, as is understood by some. Instead, it says that he, through the medium of the Spirit, by whom he was resurrected, preached unto them in the days of Noah, while the ark was a preparing. Nor does it say that Yahshua preached unto the dead, but rather unto the spirits in prison. Hence, the concern as to whether the spirits in prison mean the dead or the living is a matter of interpretation, and such an interpretation must come of the divine authority. Nowhere do we find in the Bible, when it is referring to the dead, that it calls them spirits, but it does thus designate the living. Moreover, the word plainly says that the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything. Neither have they any more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished. Neither have they any more portion forever in the thing that is done under the sun. For this parable teaches that the only way any of us can be saved from the hell's torment is to hear Moses and the prophets while we are yet alive, and that if we hear them not, then the Yeshua cannot help us after death. It also teaches that we are not persuaded by them, neither will we be persuaded that one rose from the dead, Luke 16:29-31. And it says there is no chance for the salvation after the death, then if any while living have failed to hear Moses and the prophets, why should Yahshua preach unto them after they die? Yahweh is not the Yahweh of the dead, but of the living, Matthew 22:32. This brings the further study at this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, and if never ever click on our audio archive, we'll close now with a song. How long has it been? How long has it been since you've talked with the young and told him your heart hidden secret? How long since you prayed? How long since you stayed on your knee? Can the light shone through? How long has it been since your mind felt at ease? How long since your heart knew no burden? Can you call him your friend? How long has it been since you knew that he cared for you? How long has it been since you knelt by your bed and prayed to the Yahshua up in heaven? How long since you knew that he and felt that the day with